Hey, welcome back to the Infamous Podcast. This is Brian.
This is Johnny.
And what's up, Johnny?
Not much. What's going on?
Not a whole lot. It's been a week, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I'm glad today is Friday. Well, I mean, we're recording, but if you're listening to this, it came out on Friday, and I'm glad that that day is Friday.
You're glad that it's almost Friday.
Yeah, I'm ready for the week to be over. That's 100% for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, the week kind of started off on a sad note, though.
Yeah.
You know, so we'll just hop right into our news bites here.
Sure.
Gene Wilder died.
Right.
So there's been a ton of, like, Willy Wonka memes.
He's still alive.
I knew he was alive. I didn't realize.
Well, it was like, it's not something where I go looking to see who's alive and who's dead. So it was like one of those things where when they said he died, I was like, wasn't he already dead?
That's sad. I mean, he kind of went into seclusion.
Away. I mean, after Gilda died.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He kind of went away. Understandably.
Yeah. I mean, after Gilda died, we all kind of went away because the world's not as funny without Gilda Radner. Right. And it's certainly not going to be as funny without Gene Wilder. So he's 83 years old.
We still have his movies.
We do. Yeah. And so I've seen all these like Willy Wonka memes and stuff like that. And
did anybody see anything besides Willy Wonka with Gene Wilder?
I don't know. But my favorite Gene Wilder movie is Young Frankenstein.
Okay.
And so part of the reason why, and this will explain a little bit about my sense of humor. When we were kids, we would go visit my uncle in New York City.
Okay.
And actually, he lived in Hoboken, which just it's right across the Hudson in New Jersey.
Of New York City.
Anyway, and we would get left in his, you know, apartment while he and my parents would go to bars and stuff like that. He had two movies, A Hard Day's Night and Young Frankenstein.
Okay.
And I'm probably
VHS?
Yeah, oh, totally VHS. Yeah. I don't know, between 8 and 11.
Sure.
Age-wise. I watched Young Frankenstein probably twice a day.
Yeah.
Every time we went to visit him. So, you know, it's my favorite Mel Brooks movie. I love it to death. I love him in it. I love how he gets so upset about his name.
Yeah.
You know, Terry Garr.
Oh, yeah.
I had a huge crush on her coming out of this. And then she was in Mr. Mom, you know, and it's like, nice, Terry Garr.
Yeah.
How you doing? The dude, what's his name? Frank from Everybody Loves Raymond. Frankenstein.
Oh, I can't remember his name right
now. Total brain fart right now.
Yeah.
I loved him. And then I remember seeing him in the Dream Team with Michael Keaton.
Okay.
And it's like, oh, sweet. And then he was on Everybody Loves Raymond, and I hated that show except for him.
Yeah.
But
because he genuinely like was funny.
Oh yeah, he was hilarious.
He didn't have to like force it.
No.
Him and Dolores on
Doris Roberts.
That's it. Doris Roberts.
Who passed away.
Yeah.
Not too long ago.
I mean, they both were
they're both passed away now, so.
But I mean, they both were funny. Yeah, they were like funny genuinely, like, you know, good timing on the comedy there.
But yeah, I don't know. It's just kind of sad to see
I don't know that I had a favorite Gene Wilder movie. I love Blazing Saddles.
Blazing Saddles is great.
Actually, there's one I like that most people don't even talk about that he did with Richard Pryor called Hear No Evil, See No Evil.
Yep, I love that's a great one.
That was a fun one. So,
So you know, it's sad. It's just one of those things where, you know, it's like you said, like, we didn't ever think about him being alive or dead.
Yeah,
but, like, that definitive, okay, he's dead, like, this sucks.
Yeah.
So, now, I'm not going to go off and you know, be like, oh, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory is the greatest movie ever. No, I'm probably not, but no, not. But yeah, I don't know. It's just one of those things when you lose someone who's, I mean, he's really underrated and iconic, and like, he's an underrated icon.
Yeah. I know that.
And to have that happen.
Turner Classic Movies is going to do a Gene Wilder night in this month since it's September. I think it's like September 29th, and I think Young Frankenstein is one of them.
Awesome.
What was it? The Cisco Kid that he did with Harrison Ford is going to be one of them, and then a few other things. I think they have like a documentary that they did about him.
Oh, cool.
So
now I did not realize he was nominated twice for Oscars. Once for acting in The Producers.
Yeah.
And then the second time with Mel Brooks for co-writing Young Frankenstein.
Oh, okay.
So I thought that was really cool to just kind of see.
Yeah.
I would definitely enjoy seeing a documentary about his life, for sure, because I know there was some just issues there at the end, and, you know, he's definitely
I'm sure if it's Turner, it's probably an older documentary, so there's probably nothing about, like, you know, the last few years and that. But, you know, it'd still be interesting to see what they got. Yeah. I don't think I've ever seen the Cisco Kid, so I'm looking forward to
seeing Yeah, that'll be a cool one to check out.
Young Frankenstein I hadn't seen in years, and Turner Classic Movie played it two Halloweens ago.
It's on Netflix.
Yeah, well, it was one of those ones where it was just like one of their Halloween things, and I recorded it and watched them. Like, I remember how funny this is now.
Yeah, I actually tricked the
Frankenstein.
Actually, I tricked the Kidbot 07 into watching it.
Yeah,
and she at first she was like, "I don't want to watch this," and then like
it's in black and white.
And then
what's that?
And then the jaw starts to get a little slack. Yeah. She glazes over in the eyes. She's laughing at the right parts. When I told her it was from the same people who did Robin Hood Men in Tights, she was all in. So,
yep.
But, yeah. All right. So now moving on to something a little bit lighter. So Civil War comes out on Blu-ray here pretty soon.
2 weeks.
2 weeks. I think it's already, it might be out
tomorrow on
digital HD.
Yeah.
We learned some stuff about what was happening during Civil War, more specifically where Thor was.
Yeah.
And the little mockumentary, if you will.
That's what it was.
Directed by the lady who's actually going to direct Thor Ragnarok, which is pretty fun.
Yeah.
I got to say, I thought it was the Team Thor short was hilarious.
It was fun.
Of everyone involved in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I think Chris Hemsworth, hands down, has the best sense of humor.
Yeah.
And I think he's also the most self-deprecating. Which totally worked out. Seeing Ruffalo down there was great. And, you know, the roommate Darren was hilarious. And but my absolute favorite part was when Mjolnir was in the little bed with the blanket and everything. It was so funny. But so Thor was just kind of hanging out in Australia.
Yeah, like, just hanging out in Australia.
Being upset that nobody had called him. When they called Banner and when Stark calls Banner and he's like, "There's no amount of money you can give me to join your side," you know, and Thor's like, "Oh, I want to talk." Oh, he had to go.
okay, never mind.
So it answers Thunderbolt Ross's question. You know where your nuclear weapons are? Yeah, they're at a cafe
in Australia.
They're at a cafe in Australia drinking coffee.
Yeah.
Wondering why.
Why haven't we been called into action?
One was avoiding action. The other was desperate for action. So anyway.
Now I'll be curious to see what the real reason is.
Yeah. Wow. So, well, we'll learn that.
Well,
probably
I'm sure that
Ragnarok
is going to be like happening around the same time.
Yeah.
As Civil War.
So.
That way it explains why they're not, you know, showing up.
They're, Hulk is fighting Beta Ray Bill in the gladiator pits.
Yeah, there you go.
Like the, Planet Hulk animated movie.
Yeah. Since they can't use the Surfer.
Yeah.
Poor Silver Savage.
Poor Silver Savage. But, all right. And then the last thing was, Stranger Things was officially picked up for a second season.
Even Stranger Things.
And, that would be awesome if they called it that.
Yeah.
But in the teaser trailer when they announced it, they put the names of every episode, and so we're actually gonna get 9 episodes instead of 8.
It's like a year later or something.
I think so. It's summer 2017, so we've got a while.
Yeah.
Now you liked it. We talked about this four or five weeks ago. Yeah. So you can go back and listen to it. We reviewed it. In the midst of our episodes.
Yeah.
And you really liked it. I was not crazy about the first half of the season.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed the ending.
Yeah.
And to be 100% honest, like, if they would have left it and never came back to it, I would be just as satisfied.
It had a good conclusion. It made you go, "Oh, there's more."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or, "Oh, there could be more." Like something like that. I'm definitely interested to see where it goes.
Yeah.
We were talking about this just the other day about how, you know, people are still rewatching it. You know, its streaming numbers are fantastic.
There's people that are like watching it weekly.
Yeah.
Like, not watching it all at once. They're literally watching it weekly that I know. So it's like, okay.
I was thinking maybe we should do that.
I thought about it.
And then at the end of like, you know, like maybe we recap each episode individually.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, just as something kind of fun to do. Or bring someone different in to like each week.
Right.
To be like, "Hey, we're going to watch this. you know, right. come in and talk about it with us. I don't know. It's definitely something that has a lot of legs.
Yeah.
And those kids are so great. Like, I'm gonna go really back hope and watch
it
again just stuff.
To see if I get more from it since I watched it all in one day.
Yeah, I watched it over the span of a week.
Right.
I ended up watching the last three episodes just straight through.
I think that if you were going to watch it, like, even if you're watching it on a weekly basis, I think at least those last two episodes have to be watched as one.
It's like a two-parter. Yeah. But, yeah, so, I mean, that's all good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was a decent mini-series.
Yeah.
I guess that's what you would call these.
Limited series.
Yeah, they call them limited series, but I prefer the mini-series thing.
Speaking of limited series, The Night Of finished on HBO.
Yeah.
You might need to borrow my Now password and just check it out. Right. It was the end was awesome.
Okay.
I'm not gonna spoil anything. Sure. But it definitely was awesome. Okay. So and it's controversial as well. But I was really happy with the way it ended. I was really happy with that series all the way through. Yeah, so thanks to David for suggesting that one and really, like, pushing me to watch it. Because it was on my watch list on the HBO Now app, but I was kind of like, oh, I'll get to it when I get to it.
Right, and yeah, I've got a lot of those. I'll get to it when I get to it.
I'm glad I got to it to the point where I was caught up to watch the finale live.
Yeah.
Because I would have hated to have been spoiled.
Oh, okay.
So, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm, like, at this point, I started watching V last night.
Oh,
and I'm like, because it had been in...
You have it on DVD, don't you?
I do. And it's been in my head, like, for a while to, you know, I should go back and watch this because I haven't watched it in a long time. And that, so, yeah, I started it last night and I made myself go to bed because like, if I don't, I will watch this whole thing.
Sure.
It's 4 hours and I'm like, yeah, I'll sit here and watch the whole damn thing if I start watching
the entire thing. Yeah. All the way through.
I even pulled the final V, the final battle out because I know I'm going to watch that right afterwards. I will not watch V, the original series.
No?
It's not really that good.
So I always felt like when they brought V back a couple years ago with Marina Vakana Alan Tudyk and those guys, that...
Elizabeth Mitchell.
Elizabeth Mitchell. Yeah. That they did a huge disservice by trying to make it seasons, you know, instead of trying to do a couple of miniseries.
Yeah.
So
I just think that networks now don't think about miniseries like they did back in the 80s.
I mean, I think we're hopefully starting to see some of that coming up, but
I just think that they should look at, if they look at Netflix and look what they do and look at what all the other streaming networks do, those are miniseries.
Yeah.
I mean, in all legitimate things, they're miniseries. And that they may be 13-hour miniseries, but I mean, Roots was a long miniseries.
Yeah.
The Stand was a week-long miniseries. Yeah. V, if you put V and V the Final Battle together, that was a 10-hour miniseries.
Yeah.
And that, because it is one whole story.
Yeah.
And that, like, it was a week-long.
It was what, CBS?
V was NBC.
But the reboot was
ABC.
ABC. Yeah. Like, ABC's got problems with that. Like, they want to stretch everything out to be 22 episodes, which is ridiculous. Well,
and I think that story-wise, they should have just continued it off of what happened in those miniseries.
Yeah.
Forgot about the original TV series and just did a story that would have been 25 years later,
the follow-up.
This is what's happened to the world in that process, because there was a V comic book and they did some, you know, most of it was ridiculous stuff and that, but they did some stuff in there where I'm like, that would have been interesting in like the miniseries. Like, I remember, like, somebody sneaking a nuclear bomb onto one of the ships and blowing it up.
Oh, that's cool.
And I'm like, that would have been a cool storyline.
That would have been,
you know.
All right, so let's get to our main topic.
Sure. Yeah.
So, which we didn't even announce at the top of the show.
That's okay. We announced it last week.
We did. So, in the continued celebration of 50 years of Star Trek and the September 6th anniversary of the original series, we're going to talk about the original series.
Yes.
Now, you watched more than I did prepare.
My brain is like, it's sponged in there.
Sure. So. And I remember a lot of it.
Well,
and,
right.
You know, because I've seen many of the episodes over and over and over again. But I did get three, like, ones that I felt like were the ones I needed to get the refresher on from there's a fan favorite list on Amazon that you recommended, which was great. 10
fan favorites, which, like, if you just watch those 10, you get the gist of Star Trek. Like, if you've never watched Star Trek before. Mm-hmm. There's other ones that, you know, I think are good ones and that, but those 10 were, like, I'm like, I think I looked at it and I went, there's, like, one or two missing that I would have put on that top 10, and there's a couple that I would have left off.
Yeah, yeah. So.
And that, but they're the ones that are standouts are in there.
Yeah. So one of the ones I watched was Space Seed.
Yeah.
And that was the introduction of Khan.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
It was such a cool episode.
And you know what's cool about them now is because they went back and remastered them.
Yeah, and that's what's on. So
the effects that are on, that, and those are the Amazon and Netflix. And
the actual exterior shots of the ship.
The like special effects are all digital.
Updated.
Yeah.
Quote unquote.
They make the story more enhanced, I think. Because, you know, it's like the story's already good with what goes on the ship.
You don't need to be dated by the digital effects.
That like is damaged. Mm-hmm. It's actually damaged.
Right.
And I mean, obviously, 1960s, they did a really good job with models and that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if you find like an original box set DVDs without the remaster and all that, you see that. But it's like Space Seed when they find the Botany Bay.
Right.
It's actually dead in space. Yeah. So it's floating at a weird angle instead of just hitting, sitting there.
You see the pits, like, from where it was hit. And I really liked it. I liked Khan. Ricardo Balteban was the right mix of suave and diabolical.
Yeah.
And that's what it needed. And, you know, that's probably the best thing about episode two or Star Trek two is it's literally a continuation.
It's a sequel.
Yeah. I will say a few things kind of made me laugh and dated the show a little bit when he wanted to read about he wants to read about the schematics of the ship, right?
Yeah.
No, you cannot read about the schematics of the ship, right?
Yes, but we're not that friendly.
But they put the screen to him, and he goes, "Well, here, let me load the computer tapes."
Yeah,
it's like where are the punch cards? Yep. That's, you know, why we're at it. So it just so dates it when they do stuff like that.
But you know, it's one of those things where you can't go back. And say,
no, you can't go back. But
can I see the USB drive, please?
Well, no, it just made me laugh. But because
there's stuff in there where you're like the biobed, you're looking at him and going, oh, we got those now. And it's like, and they're so much better.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because there's like the pad, which is our iPads, and the tricorder, which is, you know, essentially our, you know, phones. And
oh, yeah. The communicator, you know, and the tricorder are, you know, our phones. Yeah.
So, I mean, they did get some stuff right. But, you know, other things like that where it's like the tapes. It's like, oh, wow. That's just some old computing knowledge right
tapes,
there.
All
right. I'll say for 1966. It holds up surprisingly well.
Most of it does.
And I have a few other like just tiny nitpicks.
Yeah.
And I actually had these as a kid, right? So when you're watching a show, you typically don't realize you're looking through a camera, right?
Right.
In Star Trek the Original Series, especially in the first season, first five to eight episodes, right?
Yeah.
Every time the camera starts to pan, it shakes a little bit and then will follow.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it completely took me out of every single scene.
Yeah.
And I was sitting there watching it and I remembered this is what pissed me off about this show when I was a kid, because it would pull me out.
Well, I think it was just, you know, you think about the time and you think about this being a show that nobody wanted.
No,
nobody wanted this show. And thankfully Lucy was like, yeah, we'll do it.
Yeah.
I mean, literally the history of the show is Gene Roddenberry shopped it to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Every network, everything that existed back then, and Lucy Arnaz, Lucille Ball,
right,
and Desi had their own studio called Desi Lou,
right,
and he took it to them, and she looked at it, and she went, "Yeah, we can do this," and they distributed it through Paramount, but it was produced. The first 2 years, I think, were produced directly from Desi Lou, and I think Paramount bought Desi Lou in the last season.
And, which explains part of the problems that the last season had.
Yeah, the last season's a train wreck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other kind of tiny nitpick thing is the eyeliner or the eyeshadow on the guys.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. The makeup.
Everyone but William Shatner.
Well, that's because.
But like Sulu looks ridiculous with the eyeliner. Well, but not was, as
what like, threw it off is because, you know, it's the future,
right?
So the lighting's different. Mm-hmm. Like the way they lit those sets was really weird, and you see it more in the still photos right. than you do. And I mean, you see it on the show,
yeah.
With the still photos that are in color, you can see like just the weird lighting effects,
mm-hmm.
and it's screwed with the makeup.
Oh yeah,
I really think like it's screwed with like even like aliens looked weird, really yeah. weird,
which and, was fine. Like for Spock, yeah. it worked, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
For Sulu and Chekhov. In McCoy,
yeah,
they didn't need that.
Yeah,
the you know, but the other thing is watching this is going back and watching it. It just like reaffirms my love for DeForest Kelly.
Oh
like,
yeah,
I loved McCoy. Like yeah. like, and it brought me back to being a kid where it's like I know I should have been like Kirk or Spock, but like McCoy, Sulu, those were the guys I really enjoyed watching. Yeah. Like Uhura, I had such a crush on her.
What's
so.
Funny is like you say that in the first episode that airs in 1966. Mm-hmm. Is a McCoy focused episode.
Yeah, it's the
Man Trap.
Yeah.
Where he goes to meet an old girlfriend to deliver supplies.
Right.
And like Shatner comes off as kind of like a smartass in the episode. Like
yeah.
literally Kirk comes off as a smartass teasing McCoy about this ex-girlfriend.
Yeah.
And like the whole episode just McCoy is like a focus.
Yeah.
And it's fun. I mean, yeah. you know, because at one point, the creature, the salt vampire, takes the form of McCoy, and DeForest Kelly plays it a totally different way than he's been playing McCoy the whole episode. And this is only the first episode that anybody's right. ever seen. Yeah. And you're like, well, this guy's really like playing it.
Yeah.
And that, so, I mean, you know, yeah, DeForest, Jimmy Doohan was mm-hmm. really good.
Yeah.
Like, as not good as they portray his character in the movies.
Right.
On the series, it's like, you're like, this dude
yeah,
is...
Yeah, Scotty was awesome.
You're like, yeah, he's taking care of his baby. The ship's his baby.
Like, the comics, the DC version of yeah. the comics, like, I loved Scotty.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And, yeah, I liked him on the show and everything, but, like, I don't know. I really, really loved DeForest Kelly. So, David just texted
yeah.
me. Doing a Star Trek rewatch, thanks to you guys.
Oh, nice.
So I replied, nice. Hey, we're talking about it right now. So if he calls, we're going to put him on.
Sure.
He probably won't though, because he's pretty good about that.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And then even the first one in the Amazon fan list is The City on the Edge of Forever,
which is the episode that everybody
right
like, everybody's favorite episode. Not mine, but
yeah, it's not my favorite, but
yeah.
it's definitely McCoy focused, and it's
that one. Well, that one is like one where it's like that's definitely the Trinity. The mm-hmm. Trinity focusing on them and dealing with, you know, their personal issues more than anything
yeah,
else. Just because like, it literally is like you have a choice. You know, time travelers have a choice
mm-hmm.
on saving somebody or letting them die and what the consequences of that choice will be.
Yeah.
And they literally show the emotional. Like, even Spock, at certain points in that episode, without the emotion, but with the human element that he has, that, you know, they, I don't know if this, I don't think this one, like, Journey to Babel had aired yet.
Right.
So they really hadn't revealed that he, you know, his parentage was a human and a Vulcan. You didn't know that for sure. Oh, nice. Yeah. So, you know, he's telling Kirk, well, we need to let it. You know, Joan Collins.
Right.
Edith Keeler.
And she was so,
oh, man.
So hot. I was like, oh, man.
It's like, you're like, wow. It's like, man, Joan Collins. I mean, she looked good as an older woman, too. But it's
oh,
like,
yeah. But
man.
Like, you know.
It's like,
well, like, even in Spacey, the woman that played, the redhead.
Yeah. Who, Collins' wife.
Collins' wife. Yeah. It's like, oh, she is.
Romaine?
Wow. Yeah.
Is that it?
Romaine? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things where that episode really is a good episode, but it has a lot of controversy behind it because it was written by Harlan Ellison.
Oh.
And they changed things.
Yeah.
Like in the last few years, there was a book that came out that was the original script. And then I think IDW published like his version of that story.
Okay.
Last year, year before last. I think it's available in trade at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those things where that one has controversy behind it because of, you know, Harlan Ellison
right.
kind of is a vocal mm-hmm. writer in that. So I like the version that aired. I mean, yeah. you know, obviously I've not really looked deep into the version that was the original version.
The director's cut, if you will.
Yeah, yeah. But the writer's cut.
The writer's cut. There yeah. you go.
Yeah. It was Gene's show.
Mm-hmm.
Gene created Star Trek. So, you know, even though you're farming out all these stories to these writers back then, who were very prolific writers because yeah. they were writing for Outer Limits and Twilight mm-hmm. Zone and, you know, every other show that was on TV, pretty much, it was his show. So if he didn't like the way something was written, he would change it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't blame him. I mean, no. you know.
It was his prerogative.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Of course, that kind of got him into trouble with subsequent series, but we'll get to that yeah. when we get to that. But yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think when you look back at, especially the first season, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it was groundbreaking television.
The first and second seasons, yeah, were definitely like some of the very like deep chord stories.
I mean, you have all this talk now about diversity in Hollywood and diversity in casting, and you know, you go back to 1966.
Look at the first episode, and you're like, "What?"
Yeah, you go back to 1966.
Yeah.
You know, when you know civil rights was happening, and you know the country was in an upheaval, and they had the, you know, Roddenberry to his credit.
Yeah, I mean he truly, like, as much as you hear negative about him, there's the positive mm-hmm. that he was a visionary, in the sense that, you know, he wanted to have a crew that was of different origins, you know, and that's why he fought for Spock, because Spock looked right. like the devil.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, with the pointed ears, and
you know, if anything, I think Spock was the hardest one he fought for, because it was an alien and it looked like the devil.
Oh yeah.
And that, but I mean, to have an Asian character mm-hmm. and an African character, because Uhura was from right. was from Swahili,
right?
You know,
and Africa. A Russian, you know, I even mean, though yeah, he wasn't really Russian.
Eventually, a Russian. Well, no, yeah. of everybody, well, his origin, oh, I guess his he parents is, yeah. were from Russia.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. So it's one of those things where, you know, to have a Russian character come on and say, you know, by the 23rd century, mm-hmm. we're friends with them.
Oh yeah,
and because the Cold War was like oh. in high,
yeah,
you know, high. Thing going on. I mean, to have a Scotsman who, mm-hmm. you know, Scotsmen were known to be shipbuilders and mm-hmm. ship, you know, take care of ships and engineers and that, to have that, I mean, you know.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things where the old country doctor,
yeah.
I mean.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those, you know, he fought for all that and he got it. And mm-hmm. it's like, you know, nowadays people are just like, well, you know, you should have a black character.
Right.
You should have a white character.
You know, or let's just take this white character and yeah. make them black, or take this black character and make them white, yeah. or whatever.
It's like,
you know?
Could you imagine now?
Oh God! Well,
trying to put together. A
we're about
trek.
To find out with yeah. Discovery, but right. You know, and because because Brian Fuller has talked about like, oh, it's diverse. It's like you have the blueprint for what diverse looks like,
yeah.
and it's called the original series.
Yeah,
in the subsequent series, all did very good.
Oh yeah, I mean,
when it came to casting,
yeah, there was definitely that thing where it's like, you know, I think the only major diversity thing that we'll see in Discovery that we've never seen, you know, even though it was
openly
Beyond, is a gay character. Yeah,
so
and that, but I'm leery about that because they'll end up making it some alien.
Yeah, who knows?
And I mean there's been reference to, you know, omnisexual characters, because that's what I'll call it. You
right,
know,
it's right, right.
LGBT. It's omnisexual characters sure. in the Star Trek universe since the original.
Right.
Because Kirk at times, like, kind of comes off as what Jack Harkness is in Torchwood.
Yeah.
As in, you know.
Or even in Doctor Who. Like, from Jack's
know,
first.
Just the whole
yeah.
thing of, you know, oh, hey, that looks good. What, you know.
How you
where
doing?
Can I put my, you know, at in that, and, you know,
how can we make yeah. this work? Let's yeah, get it done.
Exactly.
So
it's one of those things where it's like, you know, I think even back then they thought about that, because they never, like, you know, acknowledged people always having a girlfriend.
Well,
or
it's always the subtext, yeah. which, you know, like, you read the X-Men books, there's tons
oh,
of
yeah.
like
yeah.
subtext. You know, I think the other cool thing about watching this stuff this week was we reviewed Star Trek V.
Yeah.
Where I'm going to say it's a low point for William Shatner as an actor.
Yeah.
To go back and watch him when he was pretty much the height of his acting ability.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Kirk, like the way he does Kirk is...
Well, it's one of those things where I've always, like, said that when Shatner has a good director, you're going to get a good performance. And when Shatner doesn't have a good director, himself or
right.
some other people, because there are some episodes of Trek that...
Yeah.
You get a really, like, loose guy, like, sure. just trying... because Shatner, to me, always has been an experimental mm-hmm. actor. Nimoy is, too. Very experimental on what their performances was.
Right.
Because the acting method that they were taught is different than the acting method you get from actors today.
Sure.
And that. So there's episodes of the original Trek where you're just like, what the hell was going on behind the scenes? Yeah. And it's like, yeah. and you're going, what were they smoking? What were they drinking?
yeah.
You know, because you know that it was a little bit looser time, too, for oh, that yeah. type of stuff.
But I think...
And I know Nimoy, you know, and it's from... That For the Love of Spock that's mm-hmm. going to be coming out this month. Nimoy was probably one of the most focused people on that set.
Yeah.
Because literally, I know Adam says in the preview, Adam, his son, says that he would come home and he would literally read his script and go to bed.
Yeah.
And go back to work the yeah. next day. So it's like, yeah. And that's believable that he would have been one of the more focused mm-hmm. ones.
But no, just with Shatner and Kirk, right?
Yeah.
You have this character who has to be... Part action hero,
yeah.
Part explorer,
yeah.
You know, part father,
yeah. And definitely, there's the parent factor,
and he pulls it off in this way that, like, I think Stewart got there eventually,
yeah.
I think Sisko,
Avery Brooks.
Avery Brooks nailed the father part from the beginning,
yeah.
And the explorer part and kind of found the adventurer action hero thing right. later on.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, the way they wrote that character was he didn't want the action.
Right.
And that. So,
well, he know. Had. Yeah. Because what had happened. And then with Kate Mulgrew, like, they didn't give her the action hero side, well, but it came out because she's yeah. phenomenal.
The way they wrote that character, and I mean, because, like, there was a couple books that Jerry Taylor, who was the main creator of Voyager, she wrote a couple books that you could say were canon
mm-hmm.
because they were the origin of Janeway right. and like the origin of some of the crew. Janeway was more of a scientist.
Yeah.
Who just moved up through the ranks and that got lucky.
But she was much. She never like.
So she was more the explorer.
It's not to say she didn't care about her crew.
Yeah.
But she definitely did not have that familial bond with them until way, way later.
It was more like coming into the series in that she wasn't. It was a new ship, mm-hmm. new people. She didn't know many of them. And it was just one of those things where, do I show my feminine right. side? Like, I think that's the way they wrote it, was do I show my feminine side? And Kate Mulgrew pulled it off that, you know, she was tender at moments when she needed to be tender. And at moments she wasn't.
And when it's all based on how tight her bun was.
that's possible,
know?
Too.
But and then, like, but you like, look at...
with Kirk, I totally agree with you because, what is it, the Balance of Terror,
mm-hmm.
where the Romulans show up.
Right.
And at the very beginning is a wedding. And, you know, as the speech goes, every captain has the honor of having a wedding on their ship, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah.
Well, and Prima Nocta.
One of them dies.
All of that. Yeah.
Like one of the two die. And at the end, he has to comfort her,
mm-hmm.
but he doesn't do it in the romantic way.
No, it's.
He comes in and it's, you know, we'll take. You're part of the family kind of thing.
You're here. We're going to
take care of you. Yeah. And it's one of those things where there's episodes where you're like, you definitely see that side come out of like the Horatio Hornblower, mm-hmm. because that's what I think that Gene Roddenberry had said he based him off of was Horatio Hornblower. So it's the adventurer, but the discipline.
Right.
Like, because of the fact that, you know, he is the captain of the ship. He's kind of a loose captain. He's not like, you know, hard edged, but when he has to be, he'll nail your ass to the wall.
Yeah. But, and then like kind of the last captain with Bakula.
Yeah.
It's like, you can see where they laid the groundwork that like, even like, you know, retroactively
yeah
set it up where Kirk could be Kirk
yeah
because Bakula was, again, he was that father figure to the entire, right. not just the Enterprise, well, in this, like, instance, brother, but the family. Entire crew.
It's like, yeah.
Or the entire star, like, burgeoning Starfleet.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was definitely went out with, I'm a scientist and explorer.
Yeah.
And, like, I abhor violence. Whereas, like, there's a part of Kirk that embraced it. Yeah. And we see it in the movies later on, where definitely, like, he gets, you know, battle scarred, for lack of a better term, and he just, like, full on embraces being a warrior.
Well, and I think, like, the other one you said you watched, mm-hmm. Mirror, you see, because you go into the Mirror universe, you see that Kirk.
Yeah, the Machiavellian Kirk.
The one who, like, you know what, I'm going to kill everybody just to get what I need.
Oh, yeah.
And it's one of those things where, and I mean, Spock says it toward the end of the episode when they're back on the ship. I got to see what you people were really like.
Yeah.
And that because you guys hide it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yeah, because the Spock in the Mirror universe is the Spock in the normal universe, just made choices because of the way the situation worked out.
I think just with a sharper edge.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, no, what I did like about Mirror, and I completely forgot about it until I watched it, was this little TV that could tune people out of existence.
Yeah. It's the Tantalus.
Yeah. It's like, this is the best, like, plot device nonsense, you know, get your, you know, write your way out of any corner ever.
Yeah.
You know,
it was one of those things where it's like when Deep Space Nine did the Mirror Universe episodes, I'm like, where did that thing end up?
Yeah.
Like that they didn't have that. And it's like,
cause they didn't have it in the Enterprise mirror ones either.
Yeah. It's like, man, where did this thing come from?
Did Voyager do a Mirror Universe? No. What about TNG? I don't remember.
They never. Yeah. They did a novelization. And that's, we can talk about that one because we're obviously talking about all Star Trek.
Right.
This episode has probably been the most sequelized episode ever. There are, every comic book company has done done a Mirror Universe story. There's been 5 or 6 novelizations that have tied to the Mirror Universe.
Yeah.
The best ones are like these stories that are, and I think they're just called Star Trek Mirror Universe, and it's like 3 stories in one book.
Oh, cool.
And that, so those are kind of cool. Deep Space Nine did a really good job of acknowledging that universe, but I think that's because most of the writers on Deep Space Nine were fans of Trek. So, and you know, this, the writer of this episode, Jerome Bixby, was like one of the best sci-fi writers ever. I think. And like this, like talking about season three is like kind of like most of the worst episodes.
Mm-hmm.
But he did an episode in season 3, or he wrote an episode in season 3 called Requiem for Methuselah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably one of the best episodes of that season. And it's literally, they meet a man who's lived forever.
Oh, cool. And, oh, yeah, I remember that one. Yeah,
and it just shows how life's affected him over the years. And that, so it's just a fun episode.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, man. I just, like I said, When you look back at this, I don't think it gets the credit. Like, I don't think the original series, especially the first season, gets the credit necessarily for all the great sci-fi that came after.
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely respected and loved and things like that. Right. But, like, you know, Trekker, whatever you want to call the fan base, like, they ate a lot of shit for a long time for being fans of this. You know, for the fact that, you know, Galaxy Quest, right?
Yeah.
Which they had, like, where they had their, you know, original series and then the, you know, whatever. I mean, there were people who for some time were saying that, oh, Galaxy Quest is, you know, one of the best Star Trek movies ever. And it's like, no, it's not. Like, it's what it is an homage to the original series.
It's an homage. It's a riff.
Mm-hmm.
Because it does riff on it a lot. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, I enjoy Galaxy Quest for what it is because I can laugh at Star Trek too. You know, it's fun. It's one of those things where you can go back and watch any show and have a laugh at it. And even though it's a serious show, you could have a laugh at it.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where it's like, you know, yeah. And I mean, it's a very groundbreaking show for many reasons. But I mean, a lot of the shows back then, I think, were doing that. But the science fiction shows did it the best because they could slide it in.
Well, it's the future.
There's a it's the future. But like, there's an episode that Frank Gorshin is in called "Let This Be Your Last Battlefield," I think is what the actual name of the episode is, and it's literally these two guys that hate each other have been chasing each other across the galaxy, and the thing that's different about them is one is black on the right side and one is black on the left side. And literally in the episode, Kirk says something to one of them like, "Why do you hate each other? You guys are the same." Mm-hmm. And they're like, "No, we're not. He's got white on the right side and I'm white on the left side." And it's like the slap in the face of why would you hate each other? You are the same.
Right.
And it's
they're completely different.
Yeah.
You know, it's,
yeah, but it's the thing where those writers acknowledge they're the same, but they're different.
Yeah.
You can be the same and be different and still work with each other.
Right.
And it's just one of those episodes where it's like, you know, you're like, whoa, it's like, it's right there in front of your face. Mm-hmm. It's like, how does this happen?
Like a lot of it, it's like, hey, American public.
Yeah.
This is you literally like smacking you on the face. Like,
this,
you know,
this is what's going on outside your front door, right?
Yeah.
Now. I mean, you know, yeah, everybody's like, oh, it was groundbreaking because of the first interracial kiss and all that. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, that, yeah, okay. But I'm like, when you go back and actually look at the meat of stories, it's like, that ain't that big a deal.
No.
It's stuff like...
It wasn't a big a deal
to
that world.
Right.
It wasn't a deal to that world.
Right.
And I don't think the other subsequent series had the chance. They weren't there to break that kind of ground, right? Like, this was a once-in-a-lifetime show.
Right, yeah.
And the fact that it even got put on the air, like you said, was a miracle.
Yeah.
The fact that we got two really good seasons and one mediocre best season.
Decent episodes throughout, but not the greatest.
Speaks volumes.
Right.
You know, and then to have 13 films come from this.
Oh, yeah. To have 13 films, 700 hours of Star Trek, pretty much.
Yeah.
I mean, six series now that'll be spinning off from, you know, this little show that could.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember reading stories about the first convention, like the first major convention in New York, where they didn't think anybody was going to show up.
Right.
And then there so many people showed up that they had to expand out. And, you know, the crew, you know, Shatner and crew showed up and was like, what's going on? Mm-hmm. Like, literally, it's like, what, how? And it's because of the reruns.
Yeah. I mean, I remember watching these on, like, we're in Cincinnati. And it used to just be XIX before the W was in front of it. And it was our Channel 19 Fox affiliate.
Yep.
And I would watch these on Saturday afternoons.
Oh, yeah.
Anytime it rained.
All the time.
You know? In the evenings sometimes, you know, I remember USA ran them for a long time. And, you know, where I think I really became a fan of Star Trek was with The Next Generation.
Right.
Which we'll get more into that and my love-hate relationship with that next week. But this laid the groundwork. This series, for me personally, laid the groundwork for this giant fandom that, like, you know, I think I've shared the story before. When I was in eighth grade, I read Lord of the Rings, all three books, and The Hobbit, in chronological order. So I read The Hobbit first, and I was all ready to go in like fantasy. Like, I had my 20, I was ready to buy a 20-sided die and start playing Dungeons and Dragons, like with the three friends I knew who played Dungeons and Dragons. And then I read Dune.
Yeah.
And I was like,
which is more hard sci-fi.
And I was like, hold on a second. And then after reading Dune, I just kind of remembered, like, you know, wait a second. I loved this like thing.
Yeah.
I had, remember the Choose Your Own Adventure books?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, definitely.
I had two Star Trek Choose Your Own Adventure books. And every time I read through, I would try and get whoever it was teleported into a rock.
Okay.
Because that was like one of the things, and it's like, that was my goal, to teleport whoever it was into the rock.
Reuben Daniels.
Yeah.
Red shirt number 4.
Right. You know, to the point where, like, on my other website, Going Geek News, if you go there and type in, just go in and do slash, like, 404 slash whatever, my my 404 error page says this page has been redshirted. Beam on back to the homepage to find what you're looking for.
Right.
Like, you know, like, it's been that big of an influence.
Right, right, yeah.
So, like I said, like, while, and we'll get into it more next week, while the next generation really solidified.
Yeah.
Like, this show.
For you, yeah.
This show totally set me down the path of what kinds of stories I like, what I look for. You know, it's why I love the Marvel Cosmic stuff so much. It's why I love the Green Lantern Corps.
Sure. It's the love of sci-fi.
Yeah.
This is, you know, a good way to fertilize a mind. Mm-hmm. To sci-fi.
Absolutely.
This, Dune, The Martian Chronicles,
mm-hmm.
the Ray Bradbury book. There's something else that I'm forgetting.
Well, John Carter of Mars.
Well, the,
You know, the Burroughs books.
The Burroughs and Mars like books, yeah. The Barsoom series.
Yeah. The, you know, Fahrenheit 451.
Yeah.
You know, that one for sure. There's a book, it's I think it's right over there. I think it's called Stranger Than Fiction.
See it.
Anyway.
Yeah.
But it's about like a group of essentially mutants. Yeah. You know, but it's total sci-fi.
Well, yeah,
you know?
It's one and of it's those things.
But that book was written in the '50s.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's just one of these things where it's like, yes. And again, like I'm gonna go back to the X-Men, right?
Yeah.
The X-Men to me are at their best when they're in space.
Right.
And they're in, you know, they're at their best
on
when,
the USS Enterprise, because it happened.
Yeah. But you have like Cyclops, who is very much a Kirkian character, you know. You just have all this, and so
wouldn't it be that, you know, because we can, I mean, we can literally look at those two together.
Mm-hmm.
They came out at the same time,
yeah.
And I mean, obviously, when Paramount was letting Marvel publish their comic books, mm-hmm. and that there was a X-Men Star Trek crossover, but wouldn't it have been interesting because I don't like Cyclops that much, but if Cyclops did not have Jean, mm-hmm. and would have been more Captain Kirk,
yeah,
where, you know, any female was up for grabs,
yeah,
and more of an adventurer and not so uptight,
mm-hmm.
because Kirk had an uptightness to him, but if he had to get in a brawl, he was in.
Right.
I mean, the dude would come out bloody with ripped shirts all the time.
They're both super strategic characters.
Yeah.
They both had their characters assassinated essentially by leaving a wife or love interest who had a son and didn't know that son.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was, you know, and I think like,
and then that's another element that would have been interesting to see is Kirk as a father.
Yeah.
Like knowing that he had that son.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously that was a different writer's idea than Gene's idea, but to see Kirk with the thought of, my son's on Earth, or my son's at this space station, or whatever.
Yeah,
and how it would have affected his decisions
to see that. Like, you know, and I think we have a great opportunity to see that with like the Kelvin timeline.
Yeah,
because Pine is channeling
1960s
William Shatner.
Yeah,
and you know, I really like Chris Pine, and he's really good in a lot of things.
Oh yeah.
And I think if they gave him the opportunity to really play with this character and not just be, you know, the anti-establishment, you know, I joined Starfleet on a dare.
Yeah.
I'm going to go out and I'm going to just fight.
Yeah.
To really show the vulnerability that Kirk had as Shatner's version in the series.
Yeah.
Like, then we get something special with the movies.
You
absolutely do.
At the end of Beyond, it's like, don't you want to see what's out there?
Like, Beyond is coming out on DVD soon.
Yeah.
And I cannot wait to watch that movie.
Oh,
again.
Yeah.
Like, I'm kind of bummed I only went to see it once.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really, like, I think it'll be a sleeper hit because it's probably one of the best Star Trek movies they did.
Top three.
Yeah.
Top three.
Yeah, top three for you.
So
I'd say it's in my top five.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where, and I think at the end of that movie, you do really get to see Pine as Shatner Kirk, because it's that whole, the character of Kirk is just wanting to be out there,
mm-hmm.
on the front line, seeing what's coming at him.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where you see that a lot on the original series.
Yep.
And that, You know, I recommend, like, if people want to check out the novels, there's a lot of really well done novels too. You know, the animated series, there's a few good episodes in there.
Yeah, I've never watched the animated series. What
was
cool about the
animated series was that they got the cast to come back and play and the voices. And it was fun because obviously it didn't have a budget like a regular TV series because there was aliens on the bridge.
Right.
There was alien crew members flying the ship. And it's like, I want to see more of that. Like in the new movies, it's like, you know, more stranger looking aliens than just what they put in the
instead
background.
Of all humanoid.
Yeah. There's an alien on the animated series named RX. And it's like, you know, that would be a cool visual character to have.
Mm-hmm.
In the movies, and I think that you
quit human washing Star Trek.
With the death of Anton,
yeah,
it's like replacing him with an alien character like RX would be,
because
it'd be a totally different. You don't have to compare an actor to Anton. It's like you have something totally different.
You hear that, Paramount? Johnny just gave you an idea for free.
Yeah.
All right. On that note, do you have any final words about the series?
No, I think I'm pretty good.
We've talked about it for the last 40 minutes. I think just to kind of close out, like, this is definitely one that holds up for, I'm going to say, 85% of the episodes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which, considering, like, you look at its compatriot in crime, if you will, with the Batman the Animated Series. Like, because they both, or not animated, Batman 66, live action. Sorry.
Batman, yeah.
I'm just so used to saying Batman, the animated series that came out. You know, maybe 15% of those hold up.
Yeah. You know?
They're different. It's a different beast, but both from the 60s and 66.
The best one that I can compare it to is Lost in Space.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So if
which
you
is on either Amazon or Netflix. Oh, cool. I completely forget. Cool. But, like, I saw it and I added it to watch lists. Cool. And
yeah, but you can watch episodes of Lost in Space and go, these are really dated.
Yeah.
But there's episodes of Star Trek where you're like, you know, this is still stuff they're talking about today.
Yeah, it's surprisingly relevant. Yeah,
the social commentary on Star Trek, I mean, even with Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, you know, they all have a social commentary that is still relevant to us. I think that's why Star Trek has been around for 50 years and stayed around and will stay around for probably another 50 years.
Well, like you talk
because
about...
Because it is... us.
Yeah.
It is about us.
Well, everybody, like almost everyone, can identify with someone in Star Trek. And you know, that's kind of the big talk, like with comics and like the changing of characters, races or sex or whatever. Yeah. Like you know, spoiler alert, Amazing Spider-Man 17, which came out this week.
Yeah.
Elektra is a girl now.
Oh, okay.
So
yeah. I see
you know,
that on the cover. Because
Max Dillon. Anyway, but they needed to do that after the abomination that was Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Yeah.
But, it's just one of those things where, you know, it was groundbreaking at the time, still relevant today.
Right.
Still messages that we all need to listen to.
Yeah.
And you know, just the last thing is you look at, I feel like the heir apparent to the show was Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
The Ron Moore one.
Yeah.
Not the unwatchable
Lauren
Green
one. Ron Moore is tied to Star Trek.
And he is.
We will talk about that.
And we will next week. On that note, next week we are covering
Deep Space Nine.
Yeah. Oh yeah, he was on Deep Space Nine a lot, wasn't he? Next week we're Next Generation.
Yes.
And I will endeavor to watch more than three episodes to prepare to talk. But I feel like with this one I have a handle way more.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, for you, for me, I, you know, Next Generation is the one that I watched because it was on weekly.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know. This one I remember watching throughout the years as a kid, and that, so it's like there's episodes where I'm like, oh yeah, I remember watching this when I was blah blah blah, and it's like, you know, Next Gen, it's just I watched that the whole time it was
right. So alrighty then.
Okay.
On that note, you can find new episodes of the Infamous Podcast every Friday anywhere podcasts are found and on our website. We are on iTunes, Google Play, anywhere podcasts are found. Okay. We're on iTunes, Google Play, and on Stitcher.
Is it on tapes?
No, but like, you know what? I figured out how to do that. So if you want a tape, I will sell you tapes of the show.
Ooh,
so
nice.
I still
will
have
they be those cool multicolored tapes that you could just stick into a slot and things popped up on the screen? I always was wondering how did that happen. There's nothing in there that like makes it look like. Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway.
Damn it. Explain that one to me, Gene.
You can find us online at infamouspodcast.com. Theinfamouspodcast.com will get you there as well. We are on Facebook, Instagram. I was going to say iTunes again. Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Infamous Podcast. We keep it really simple for you guys. And I'm Brian Tudor. You can find me at Brian Tudor on most social networks.
I'm Johnny Podorf. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Johnny Podorf. I am on Facebook, and I will not share my schematics.
All right. And if you like what you hear, please don't hesitate to dole out those big fat 5-star reviews.
Yeah.
And definitely write a review and let us know what you think. And you know, you can also reach us at contact@infamouspodcast.com. We'd love to hear from you guys, and it helps make this show better.
Can they leave comments on the page?
You can leave a comment on the website.
Leave comments. So. I want to see comments.
All right. On that note.
Oh, sorry. Also, if you're looking for stuff with Star Trek, StarTrek.com is a good resource.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
If you want to find out stuff about Gene Roddenberry, I think Roddenberry.com is what his son has set up now. Cool. So you can get stuff that's like, you know, only available there to purchase, but there you can also read about Gene. And you know, Gene served in the military and that during World War II, and has a very like
interesting
wide
past.
Range of life, right, that you know a lot of people don't know about. So it's definitely one of those things where go and read about Gene Roddenberry.
So that being said, whenever you're listening to this, enjoy, and we will see you next week.
Have a good one.
Later.